And welcome everybody on YouTube for Off the Hook Overtime as we continue our conversation and basically take phone calls a little bit later on. We're not taking phone calls right away. We'll take them at some point. Rob, did you make it okay in Skype land there?
I did, and we appear to be on YouTube. I can hear us. We're a little low.
A little low. Boy, we're always low. I don't know what else I can bring up. I could just talk louder, I guess. Okay, Alex and Arsene, you both made it as well, right?
Yes.
Present.
Okay.
And Gila is on her way back to her seat.
Okay, as long as she doesn't go back to the subway.
Yes.
Okay.
No one's in a rush for that.
So, we have other stories that that we can discuss, and we can take phone calls a little bit. Oh, and Kyle's here as well. Welcome, Kyle.
Yeah.
I don't know if are we still low, Rob? The last thing we need are people calling up and saying we're too low. That seems to happen on YouTube a lot, and not sure why.
It's pretty quiet.
I can turn this down.
Yeah.
I can turn that input off. I don't know if that
I just adjusted it in the software.
Okay, so we have a software solution, which hopefully will make things a little bit better. Unfortunately, it takes us about 20 seconds to find out if it made things any better, because that's just the delay that we're dealing with.
I mean, no one's reaching out about it on social media.
Because they can't hear us. They don't know how to do that. Okay, fine. I want to talk about, we're mentioning swatting a little bit, but apparently this story, according to our friends over at WRAL in Raleigh, North Carolina, the FBI is seeing more swatting crimes as people hack into Ring doorbell cameras. Yes. Ring cameras can be a great safety tool, but the device can be manipulated by criminals if you don't take precautions. In one home, a strange voice came over a Ring camera into a little girl's bedroom. Why is there a Ring camera in a little girl's bedroom? I thought they were for doorbells.
Oh, it's probably a baby monitor type device.
Okay. And that's a Ring camera as well.
Possibly.
All right.
So I have a lot of security cameras in all our offices.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the Ring cameras are way cheaper than having a normal. So that's why you'd want to maybe do that.
Okay. Well, apparently these things are getting accessed like crazy. There's another instance where cops knocked on the door of a home after responding to a fake call of a disturbance. And both are examples of what the FBI calls Ring swatting. I'm not sure why the FBI is taking the lead on this. Maybe state lines are being crossed. Two men have been accused of carrying out a nationwide swatting spree and hacking into dozens of Ring cameras. They have been indicted by a federal grand jury in California. So I guess in their case it's federal because they're traveling across the country doing it. One of the incidents allegedly occurred in Darien, Illinois, about a year ago when police responded to the house. They found nothing going on and determined it to be a hoax. Nothing going on here. The cameras are vulnerable because they are not properly secure, it said Cyrus Walker, who's a cybersecurity expert with Chicago-based Data Defenders LLC. According to Walker, you have to not only secure the cameras, but the internet network that allows them to connect to each other and the outside world. Who knew? The one thing I recommend is that users make sure their wireless networks are as secure as they can be, which means that they have strong passwords, that they are not broadcasting their SSID, that they have encryption enabled to the highest degree, and that they separate the networks. Walker said cameras are not the only way in for hackers. And, you know, this isn't about hackers. This is about people, mischief makers, criminals, who knows what. It's, you know, if you have default passwords and things that are super simple to defeat, you don't need to be a hacker to even do that. You can get in with TVs. You can get in with game systems. You can get in with refrigerators that are connected to the internet for some reason with default passwords. All of a sudden you hop onto that and you're on the internet, on their internal network, and you can control other things. This guy said the first thing you should do when you buy a new connected device is change its default security settings. The device that you bought, someone else bought that also, and they have the same default settings. So it's extremely important that when you crack the tape on that box and you plug it in, the very first thing you do is change the username and the password on that device so that only you have access to that device at that point, until you lose the piece of paper that you wrote it on and you have no way into your damn refrigerator. Yeah. Walker concluded that cybersecurity is not difficult, but it does require people to do more than just plug in their devices and turn them on. Remember when we used to just be able to plug our damn devices in and turn them on? Now you have to set all kinds of security settings and everything like that?
Yeah, I do remember. And I think that a big problem in our community is we're not kind of evangelizing enough about the kind of next steps of basic networking. Like, specifically, you mentioned setting up subnetting. I've talked about it. It's been on my list of things, you know, to really master and to implement in various places. And I think that we're not, like, when hackers get together, it's, like, assumed, oh, yeah, everybody knows, everybody does, everybody, you know, and then nobody's actually building on the knowledge. And this thing of, like, coming at it, like, yeah, I want to learn a really basic thing because I know it's important to learn and I know it's important to know how to use. It's sort of assumed so often that people and people are sort of afraid to even ask. And I think that's something that as hackers we should be really concerned about, how much we're teaching people and how much we're teaching ourselves, and like encouraging people to go beyond just like you know, one subnet, you know, one IP scheme for your office or your home network. You should be comfortable with all of the various ways you can segment and compartmentalize. I talk about that all the time, mainly because I want to hear more people talking about how to do it in basic ways, because I myself have found there's just not enough teaching. There's not enough, like, reiterating of how to do basic firewalling and subnetting. And I actually learned it by working on SecureDrop, because that's, you have to do that to set that up. So, you know, it's learning by doing. We need to be a lot less, like, elitist and make less assumptions, because the stuff we talk about seeps out and becomes stuff that the mainstream absorbs. Mm-hmm. And if we're not talking about it and we always make assumptions that, you know, everybody's on this certain plane of understanding,
right,
I think we do a real disservice to ourselves and everybody who might listen to us.
Oh, absolutely. Well said, too. And I get that same frustration where, you know, I'm questioning something involving technology, something involving perhaps an appliance, and met resistance for, you know, criticizing or questioning or trying to figure out a way of doing something differently and not just following the rules. And I can imagine people who don't have any technological knowledge or ability to speak of and have no interest in obtaining more of it, what they have to deal with just to, you know, basically cope in today's society. Yes, Rob.
It's also with this particular problem, with the issue of swatting, it's important to recognize why this is particularly a problem with, say, these Ring cameras, because part of the culture behind the people who would pull a stunt like that is, with a hacked Ring camera or some other way of watching, they get to see the chaos that they're unleashing upon their victims. And this is also why swatting is something that a lot of people who do things like live streaming games, Twitch, things like that, are finding themselves at the mercy of people who would unleash a swatting on them, because then you get to watch the swatting happen and you get to see what's going on. And so when you're putting in cameras in your home and you don't control fully where that video signal goes, or you don't secure that video signal in all the ways that you can, you're putting a great deal at risk.
Can someone explain to me why a refrigerator would need to be on the internet? I'm trying to figure that one out. I mean, okay, I guess you want to turn it off maybe if you're away, but why? Why do you want to do that? Gila, do you have an idea?
Well, I mean, I would like to preface this by saying that I don't think a refrigerator needs to be connected to the internet.
I'm not endorsing this
concept mm-hmm. at all. However, there are people who think that if your refrigerator is connected to the internet, that it can analyze what's in it. And it can say, okay, you have 8 eggs and a block of cheese and a bunch of chives. Here are five recipes that you could make with these things. And also, I can add material to your shopping list because of the thing, like, you're missing one ingredient that you would need. So I'm going to add this to your shopping list, and then you can go to the store and come back and hear five more recipes you can make. Again, I'm not endorsing this as a concept, but this is the selling point.
Is that where we are right now, where we need some device to tell us how many eggs we have? I mean, you know, you're capable of opening up the door and seeing that yourself and then looking up something and saying, you can even say to a personal assistant, hey, give me a recipe for this thing. Instead, it's making these decisions for you and just being a bit aggressive, I think. But the trade-off, the real trade-off is that, you know, you have a security vulnerability because you have a refrigerator with a default password.
Actually, that R plate we talked about would be a pretty good display for a fridge. It's got the E-ink.
Uh-huh.
Just turn it sideways.
GPS. Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. You know, sometimes I think we get what we deserve. and we should always have the ability to not have to be on the net for every little thing. So as long as people have options and they get a refrigerator that just refrigerates and does nothing more, you know, I think we'll be okay.
I think there is an undervaluing of being not on a device. And what perhaps these manufacturers are thinking is, the behaviors in society right now are such that people are constantly looking at screens. So the idea that, well, let's just make them more comfortable, you know, like we'll just add to the sort of landscape of information, the availability that they're so accustomed to now. And it's just like they're swept up into the behaviors, not realizing that they could actually differentiate and sort of, if they're thinking in a more counterintuitive way, that perhaps this is the last frontier of device that's not connected, and that's a selling point. You know, it's all how you look at it and think of the, you know, the additional components and supply chains you're reducing by not doing that and so forth and scaling, and maybe you can have a better product as a result of not trying to throw all these features just out of consumers' a perceived comfort they need.
I was just afraid that the next frontier is going to be the toilet.
I'm surprised it isn't already, to be honest.
I think there are already devices.
Analyze your output. How often, how much, what kind.
Score.
There was something like that at CES.
And then talk to your doctor.
Yep.
Did you say at CVS?
CES.
CES. Okay.
There's a tool. It's like a $400 analyzer. Put it in your toilet and pee on it.
Say no more. let's move on to Alex, I'm curious about your opinion about this. This new Louisiana law that's going to require ID to view porn. Any website that has more than a third percent pornographic content is now being held responsible for checking users' ages if they are residents of Louisiana. As of Sunday, January 1st, a new law requiring those websites to verify individuals' age using a government-issued form of identification. It's called HB 142. It was introduced by Republican Representative Lori Schlegel.
I can't wait for her license number to be spread around and used.
As it should be. It aims to not only keep anyone under the age of 18 from watching porn, but to hold accountable the websites that readily supply it. Pornography is creating a public health crisis and having a corroding influence on minors. This is according to legislation. Due to advances in technology, the universal ability of the Internet, and limited age verification requirements, minors are exposed to pornography earlier in age. Pornography is destroying... now we're going on to her words. Pornography is destroying our children. You know, children are destroyed, and it's because of pornography. That's why. That's the reason. It's obvious. They're getting unlimited access to it on the Internet, and so if the pornography companies aren't going to be responsible, I thought we need to go ahead and hold them accountable. That's grammatically wrong, for one thing. But regardless, you know, when I was a kid, we had magazines. And, you know, there was no age check on the magazines if you had one in your hands.
I have a story about that.
We all have stories about that.
Yeah.
But this is insane. Alex, any legal thoughts about this?
I mean, it's so crazy. It really is.
The hell is beeping?
Absolutely nuts.
Something's beeping. Hold on a second. Whoever is beeping, or whatever is beeping, please stop it.
You heard that? You actually heard that?
I hear beeping. What? Yeah. Are you beeping?
I think that was, you know, 9 floors down from me outside. I think a truck was backing up. So,
well, can you stick your head out the window and tell them we're doing radio and to please shut the hell up?
Thanks. Disconnect the fridge.
Yeah, I could. I absolutely could, yeah. Back to the issue, though, of requiring some kind of identification in order to view porn. I mean, I could you imagine a situation where that data is then misused? I mean, it's totally insane. It's really nuts to think about this. It's also crazy to think that kids aren't going to figure out a way around that, number one, to access pornography. The thing is, like, if they actually implement that law, the only thing you would have to do to avoid it entirely would be to use a VPN. Right? So I think, you know, VPN services that run in the state of Louisiana, unless they're going to outlaw VPNs, there's going to be absolutely no way to enforce that. And I just think it, you know, as a law on its face, you know, seems to be protecting minors. You know, I see it as particularly privacy intrusive, not necessarily something that would be unconstitutional as I understand it at the moment. Right? I mean, there are so many other flaws, though, you know, with the law that I don't think it would need to be unconstitutional for it to be vetoed or tossed in the trash can, because it's also, in a sense, requiring these porn sites, right? If you think about the collateral consequence here, if the issue that the Louisiana State Legislature has with porn sites is that they're horrible, bad influences, corrupting organizations, they shouldn't be trusted, well, they're now going to require those very same corrupt, horrible companies and to collect data, including, you know, driver's license photographs on every single one of their citizens. So in that sense, I could see this as the legislature's the legislators in the legislature, either putting their own citizens at risk because of some ridiculous notion that children are at risk from pornography on the internet. I mean, it's just that the internet has been full of pornography for so long. If that is the case, it's really taken them a long time to wake up.
And the thing I really don't get is, do they not know what VPNs are? I don't want to keep harping on VPNs, but a VPN will simply allow you to disguise where you're coming from and bypass this entire thing.
One other thought I had is that this in their mind, is the solution for the children.
Uh-huh.
How many times has eliminating any concept of sex over history, how is that gone? I mean, there's, like Alex indicated, there's ways around these things. Determined people will seek out those alternatives, as you said, and in whatever form it takes.
The hope is that one of those alternatives is a Bible. That instead of picking up, you know, porn, they'll pick up a Bible instead.
There's a lot of that in there,
that's
too.
That's number two. When number one is porn, number two is religion.
But it's not... it's not the thing,
right?
You know, and just treating it as though, oh, we'll just do this. And of course, the adults, they're the ones that have to submit and suffer this to basically to treat adults with suspicion, hostility, and basically they pay the cost in the interest of these specious minors out there that are being ruined.
Go ahead, Gila.
Whose responsibility is it to figure out what sites are 33.3 or more percent pornographic?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I was thinking about this, right? Like, if you think about, first of all, who's defining what is pornographic and where that line is drawn. And if you, you know, there are times when you're just surfing, I don't know, going through Twitter, going through your social media, and you're flipping and you're flipping and you're flipping and, like, joke, joke, penis, it happens. Also, having grown up in an abstinence-only world, I grew up in the Midwest in the 90s, pretending sex doesn't exist doesn't make it go away, and in fact makes kids more vulnerable to sexually transmitted infections, pregnancy, rape. If you don't know what you're saying no to, you also don't know what, if you don't know what you're saying yes to, you don't know what you're saying no to. And the more we hide it, the more dangerous things become. I was talking to a friend of mine about something else, and I said, if something is defined by its absence, if the point is the thing's absence, then its presence is much more weighted than it would be under other circumstances. But, yeah, and, you know, what if something is 33.2% pornographic? We're okay with that?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently that's all right.
And where's the upset over violence and other things that are ruining young people? You know, it just seems like a very specific case. And as Gila indicated, it's, you know, it's got implications for their overall health and development. If you completely stifle any kind of education about it, they want it out of the schools, no information about anything. And just like you said, from the Bible.
Go ahead, Rob.
There's also the fact that, like, the people trying to regulate pornography have been doing historically such a bad job of defining what pornography is. There are things that people who are not adults should have access to, things like sex education, things like health information. You know, if you look up what's happening to your body when you're adolescent on Wikipedia or something, there are people who would look at that and say that's porn. And, you know, that's going to get pulled into this whole mess of, like, how much are we hiding from the kids? Who's defining what is or isn't porn? The whole, oh, I'll know it when I see it, you know, concept doesn't actually work in terms of law and practice.
And of every place in the country, world, really, any place in the world this could be coming from, I'm sorry, Louisiana?
What? what do you mean by that?
They say they... Beads in hand, they say this.
This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. Like, you could... If Girls Gone Wild were still a thing, and I know it's not anymore, but they used to film a lot at Mardi Gras, right? Like, entire hours of stuff from Louisiana. So all I'm saying is, glass houses, Louisiana. That's all.
Good point. I'm confused about something. Maybe Alex, you can shed some light on this. But the law, it's meant to apply to citizens of Louisiana, I think, not websites in Louisiana. And if it's if that's true, if it's just meant for citizens of Louisiana, well, what happens to a site in Germany? What happens to a site in New York? Are they all expected to follow this backwoods crazy law that they just came up with? Do you have any idea?
You're muted, Alex.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. You're saying, you know, what happens, the question is, what happens when one law, I'm sorry, Manny, what was the follow-up?
The question is this law for Louisiana citizens or websites that are in Louisiana? Because I could see...
I think it would apply to any website that had patrons or visitors in Louisiana.
Any website in the world?
Yeah.
So how is Louisiana going to get a site in Germany or, as I said, New York to follow these crazy laws that they're coming up with?
Yeah, I mean, that's another issue is the extra – that's called, you know, extraterritorial effect. So the extraterritorial effect of this, you know, may be that, okay, well, they could be fined in the state of Louisiana, so other companies outside the United States are going to – comply with that law because they don't want to be fined in the state of Louisiana, right?
You know, we own 2600.xxx. And I want to be fined in the state of Louisiana. So, folks, just...
you have to add 34% porn on there.
33.1. You know, if somebody out there can run the site, we'll take all the heat.
I want to add one last thing. I think we've been talking about porn for 20 minutes, but maybe that's for the after show. But, you know, this smells like they have a system that verifies IDs. And this is going to require a lot of websites to start utilizing it. And that's kind of what this is all about. And then, you know, gambling sites are already filtered pretty heavily in the U.S. So there's some states that, that you can do, you know, lottery online. Others you can't. So the systems are there for it. And if they extend that to porn as well, I mean, that's a lot of local revenue probably for, you know, whatever regulators they have. And that's what this sounds more like, you know, someone trying to get some money versus protecting the children.
Yeah, like including the vendors. If they've already established a contract, you're kind of saying it could jump into other kind of diversify the sources of ID checks.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say this. I'm not a porn expert, so you know, I just assume that if you go to a porn website, there's porn there. But you have to pay to get to the porn. Are they all? I mean, if something is just there displaying pictures, how do you, you know, with gambling sites, I imagine there's money involved. It's gambling, after all. So that's where all the age restrictions kick in. But if it's just a site that's displaying images without any payment, I'm not sure how you would ever be able to control that.
That's a good point. I mean, I guess ideally they're going to come after the sites and say, hey, if you want to operate in our state, you know, you got to put this software in that we're gonna give you. It's our SDK.
But what does that mean? Operate in their state? You know, who would want to put a box in Louisiana with all these crazy regulations? Obviously, they'll be able to reach you wherever you happen to be. You could be on the space station.
They could force the server to be hosted there too, but it doesn't sound like that's what they want.
They also would. If a firm did not want to participate, they would basically put the onus on them to kind of like geofence any traffic from there and or send all of the Louisiana traffic somewhere else saying, sorry, we can't do this because we're not participating in such and such law. Here's a form. You can contact your state officials and so forth if you don't like that, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like it's the same thing with like sites that have alcohol or any kind of adult mm-hmm. stuff. It's basically that splash on the front that
right.
says, are you 18 plus or are you 21 plus? That's the moment. If it's a free site, if there's like some kind of private login, cause you have to be a part of a club and give a credit card number or something, that's going to already have kind of its own, home screen that's locked out from any of the content until you register. But any kind of free site, it would just basically, it would probably be something in front of the landing site akin to that age check.
Mm-hmm. And there always be ways around it, you know? There always have been, there always will be. Doesn't mean that you can't, you'll keep an eye out for where there are issues. But this kind of overreach, that's a bit much. Gila, did you have something else?
I did. I'm sorry. I'm fixated on this.
Uh-huh.
So... why is it the internet? Why is the internet the only place they're worrying about protecting kids? Are they also saying that Cinemax can't broadcast in Louisiana anymore? Because I'm reasonably willing to posit. I mean, I'm sorry to pick out one specific network, but, I mean, come on. We know what those schedules look
like.
Is that 33.3?
I said I'm not an expert, but I do know that that's not porn on Cinemax.
But would Louisiana say that it is? I mean, are we talking about measuring insertion points? Are we talking? I mean, like, who's? I'm serious here.
Mm-hmm.
Plus or minus 10% side boob.
Exactly. Like, what's?
You know,
we're
going to be on the list now. We're going to be on Louisiana's list.
I have a question though for Gila.
Yes, Alex.
What do you mean by insertion point?
You know, Alex, there are books we can recommend where you can catch up on all this.
Well, I'll
Alex,
send you some web
you
books.
Have children.
You have two kids. I don't get this.
Yes, I needed a diagram for that. So, you know.
I'm just saying.
Anyhow, I'm very curious what our listeners think, and it might be a good time since we're approaching the half-hour mark.
I saw a smattering.
There are just two more stories I wanted to very quickly get to because one of them is so sad. This is a very sad story about a woman in Georgia who's been hacked. And Google sends me stories about hacking. And their qualification for what a story about hacking is has gone down recently. See if you can find what the line is these days. But basically, hackers apparently broke into Sharon Barber's Chick-fil-A app this week. And it's nothing funny about a Chick-fil-A app, Gila.
I'm terrible. They
loaded it with hundreds of dollars from her checking account. I think the problem is they broke into your bank. Oh, no, they didn't break into her bank because she gave the Chick-fil-A app access to her bank. That's what happened. And this is the best part of the story, which comes from WSB-TV. They seemingly ordered half of Chick-fil-A's menu. Seemingly, because they haven't finished the research on that yet. They don't know if they've actually ordered half of the Chick-fil-A menu, but seemingly they did. They spent $100 so far, said Barbara, and there's about $100 left on it, on her app, I think, not on the menu. Barbara says she feels helpless watching the charges rack up on her. She's just sitting in her house looking at the money go away and all the Chick-fil-A's going to some hacker somewhere. She's in Augusta, I imagine, drinking scotch or something, watching this happen. They order whatever their heart desires at two Chick-fil-A restaurants in Maryland. But don't they have to go to those places? If you know where they are, I mean, it's a news story, so it seems like they should be able to catch the people. No matter how many times I change the settings, no matter how many times I change my password, they still are able to hack into my account. Well, she's one of countless Chick-fil-A customers across Georgia and the country who say their Chick-fil-A accounts were hacked this week. Something tells me there's a problem with the app. That's the common denominator there. The Atlanta-based company calls the activity on their app suspicious and fraudulent. Oh, gold star for them for figuring that out. They're encouraging victims to call their Chick-fil-A Cares hotline. Yes, there's a Chick-fil-A Cares hotline. And please, I'll give a prize to whoever can get that number because it's not listed in the story. The Chick-fil-A Cares hotline. I want it. I want to know how much they care. I waited over an hour to talk to someone, said Barbara. And when I did, they just kept reassuring me that my bank will give me back the $200 that was stolen. But that can be a lengthy process. Channel 2, which is WSB, Channel 2 in Atlanta, they have a consumer advocate named Clark Howard. And he gets things done. And he says, key thing with any app that you have on your phone, never, never, ever, not ever, tie it into a debit card. If that app is ever breached, that debit card is a direct tie-in to your checking account, and the money you need to live on and pay your bills is gone. Yeah, so listen to Clark. Knows what he's talking about. Yes, Gila.
If you go to the Chick-fil-A customer service website, mm-hmm. there's currently a splash bar on top that says, "We are investigating suspicious activity on some customer accounts. We're committed to protecting customers' data and are working quickly to resolve the issue. Learn more." Also, I found the number within 2 seconds.
Chick-fil-A
and they're
cares.
Open. They're answering until 10 p.m. tonight.
Okay.
If you want to call them.
Well, I don't want to call
them. You want
the number? But I do want the number, yes.
Okay. It's 866-232-2040.
And that's toll-free. Wow.
That is toll-free, and they're open until 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Saturday. And
they're not open on Sunday. There are no Chick-fil-A's open on Sunday. And, you know, I had this idea years ago when Chick-fil-A came to Long Island. Since they're closed on Sunday, and since they're very anti-gay, why isn't Sunday the day for everybody to simply plant rainbow flags at your local Chick-fil-A? Because nobody's going to be there to tell you not to. And it can just be known as the gay place on Sundays.
And or add it to their Chick-fil-A flagpole.
Because they all have one, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
McDonald's, too, if you want.
But my real question is, why? And again, this goes back to the question about refrigerators on the Internet. Why do you need a Chick-fil-A app to buy Chick-fil-A? Why can't you just buy Chick-fil-A? Go ahead, Gila. You have the answer to this, too.
Because for the same reason that you have the Dunkin' Donuts app or the Starbucks app or, you get your loyalty points, you get your free stuff, you special offers. I will admit I'm a sucker for a special offer, and yesterday was Starbucks Double Star Day, and it was very exciting for me.
Okay, but you know what? I go to a coffee shop, too. It's not Starbucks, but I go to a coffee shop, and I buy something there, and I use a credit card, and I get points. And I occasionally redeem those points and get free coffee. And I don't use an app. I just use my credit card. And they keep track of customers that way. Isn't that enough?
They're taking better care of you than Chick-fil-A does, I guess.
Well, that's not hard.
I think there's a couple things going on. The systems, like the kinds of terminals, a lot of places are using Square, Clover, Toast, whatever these different touch screen POS checkout systems are, I think they keep track of that as like a feature of the small business or whatever coffee shop implementing their particular tool. It's like, oh yeah, you can have your loyalty, your points system, and they will basically mine the credit cards as they're run through that system. The apps are a way to sort of have that same feature, but remotely. And also you have the captive audience where, like, right, you can update them about news and information. You can mine their behaviors looking through menus.
What kind of news information is Chick-fil-A going to be giving?
Let me finish. They have important updates. I'm sure there's plenty of updates in their app right now. But just let me finish. The points in that system could be more broadly implemented, like with a larger chain, not like your local coffee shop. So in other words, the POS systems I was describing are kind of mimicking what like large chains like Starbucks or in this case Chick-fil-A are doing with their homespun apps that are integrated into the broader reward system, and that allows them to not rely on credit card companies, and they get much better information. It can also support like ordering and picking up, where like you can't really do that. Like you have to walk in and use your credit card at a Chick-fil-A because you're not using the app. Or same thing with like a large chain like Starbucks.
Don't you have to walk in to get the food? How do you get the food?
No, I mean ordering. You can't order until you get there. The convenience of having the app is you can order on the way out the door, and by the time you get there, you're walking out with your order.
Because we're all in such a hurry.
Well, time is everything, you know. And
you know, my way, using a credit card, I'm not linking it to a bank account, and they can't, like, rob me blind. And, you know, I watch people drinking coffee and depleting all my savings.
I wasn't saying it was good. I was just trying to make a distinction between the different ways these things are being implemented.
Okay, last story here, then we'll open the phones. Again, Google, thank you for sending me these hacker stories. Here it is. Drivers blown away by McDonald's car hack that makes eating fries far easier. It's bound to come in useful. That's literally the headline that I got. McDonald's car hack that makes eating fries far easier. Okay, let's give it a chance. There could be some real information here. A man has taken to... Wait a minute. It's all caps. M-A-N is all caps. You know what it is? It must be one of these newspapers that has the initial word in all caps, so it's not meant for emphasis. I think so. I shouldn't have probably said it that way. But it is all caps. A man has taken to social media to share his McDonald's hack that makes eating fries far easier. The video was uploaded to TikTok. Oh, here we go. By Healthy Junk Food. That's the guy's name, Healthy Junk Food. And viewers are blown away by it. Well, I'm not sure about that. The TikTok viewer, TikTok user rather, simply orders a large cup when ordering fries at a Mackey's drive... Mackey's? Oh, this is a British newspaper. That's what this is. A Mackey's drive-thru. Okay. We should be writing this down, by the way, because it's a little complicated. TikTok user simply ordered... Why do you have to be a TikTok user? Why can't you just be a human?
Well, that's how he identifies.
Okay. All right. He orders a large cup when ordering fries. The cup perfectly fits in his car's cup holder. Well, they don't all fit in every car's cup holders perfectly. But anyway, that makes it much more stable than using the box that the fries usually come in. You know what? That's the whole thing. He puts the fries in the cup. Or else it gets the hose again. No, it's, there was like 8 pages about this, and literally I got to the end of it with the second sentence. He gets a big cup and pours fries into the big cup, and he feeds off that while he's driving. And that's the whole thing. Okay, so now we have reaction to it. He says to the McDonald's worker, "I was wondering if I can get a large fries, but please put it in a large cup." When they serve him the fries, he says to the staff member, "It's a good idea, right?" She answers, "Yes!" Exclamation point. And, oh, apparently that's a video. So you could see that in video on TikTok. It's gotten more than 1 million views and 5,000 comments. But you know what? We have just gotten stupid. This whole planet has just turned into a bunch of morons. What, I'm not supposed to say that? I can't condemn the human race? Because I think we are condemned right now.
No,
if that gets 1 million views, putting French fries in a cup, and that's called genius, and this, I'm reading an 8-page we printed this out. We used 8 pieces of paper and ink to print out this story. And it's just about somebody putting fries in a car. I learned how to do that when I was 3. For God's sake. I'm sorry, listeners. Just a complete waste of time here. No comments on this story. It doesn't deserve them. Do we have a phone call? We didn't give out the phone number. How is that possible?
Did they hang up on them?
No. We'll take it. But let's give out the phone number for the benefit of those people. 802-321-4225. Did I give it out right? 802-321-HACK is our telephone number. And we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Is anyone there? Is this one of these days where they can't hear us?
Hi, Emmanuel, calling from California.
This sounds like Rebel. Rebel, is that you?
Hello?
Rebel, can you hear me? He can't hear me.
Calling from California. Yes, I'm calling from California.
Wait, Rebel, can you hear me? Tell me that first.
Yes, I'm calling
Okay,
from
he
California.
Can hear me. Yeah. You're delaying
Where
a lot.
Rebel, calling from?
Don't make it worse, Alex. So you're in California. You know, you called us from California once before and you were driving a Tesla. Are you doing the same thing now?
Yeah, I drive that car again. I don't like it. I'm driving a Dodge Charger, which is a lot nicer, a lot, you know, nicer looking and better, you know, just easier to you know, use and not all this tablet thing and touch screen. And I couldn't even get the windshield. You know, it rained here yesterday.
Oh, no.
And I managed to get the windshield wipers working, but I couldn't get the defrosters to work.
You know, I've said this many times. I've said that I think in cars, everything should be in the same place. You know, windshield wipers should always be in the same place. Every car is different, and you have to figure it out. And God forbid, you know, it happens suddenly where you need to use them. You know, you might need 5 minutes just to find it in the first place.
Well, the Nissan Leaf, you don't have to do that. I mean, the Chevy Volt, you don't have to do that. You
know, when did you become an expert on cars? You know so much about cars all of a sudden.
Car when I talk.
You have lousy cell phone coverage, I'll say that, though.
Okay, briefly.
That was brief. I'll give you that. It's about as brief as you can possibly make it. Are you still there, Rebel? We're going to move on if you continue being a robot. Okay, he's done. Rebel, for the record, we did not hang up.
I can't believe that guy is still calling in.
Oh, my God. Arseny. That's why you fled to Russia, right? I mean yeah.
I thought it was safe.
Nah, Rebel has been calling us since, I think, the 1990s, and usually he's the first caller. That's why it's important.
At least
for
the mid-90s.
The next caller to call us now, 802-321-4225, and hopefully we'll get a different opinion on something else. Or we won't. No calls? You're nodding. Does that mean yes, no calls, or yes, we have a call? I don't know. Kyle, you keep nodding. I don't know what that means.
That's part of the fun.
Oh, yeah. Drive me crazy.
You're supposed to pick up on it.
Phone calls.
Okay, I'm picking. Wait, should I pick up?
No, pick up on my. You know what? Forget
Why
it.
Why do
you
use
deserve
that
this.
Particular
Here,
phrase?
You have a call.
Why didn't you just say that to start with? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, for God's sake.
Voice over IP.
I'm out of here.
You're getting voice over IP. I don't know. I guess I must not be getting very much internet.
When that happens, Rebel, you have to talk louder. That's how you keep the IP.
I am talking louder. I'm
all right.
It's not me. It's the internet where I am.
Let me explain. The IP is weak. Your strengthened voice goes over the IP like a numerator over a denominator, and hence it strengthens the whole thing. So talk louder, louder voice, louder V, carry the O, louder IP. See? Simple.
Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, see, it works.
Okay. Now, when I was in... All right, I just want to mention quickly, after question quickly, Louisiana does not want porn sites, but what if you use a VPN, but can't they go to the VPN and say, well, which internet provider used this VPN?
Alex, maybe you could answer that.
Could that be repeated? I'm sorry.
You're not paying any attention, are you, Alex?
Oh, I wasn't. You caught me.
Rebel, ask the question again for the benefit of Alex.
All right. When you use a VPN, does the VPN that you're using know where you're coming from? Like, I'm in California, and I go to my friend's Wi-Fi, let's say.
Okay. The answer I think you're looking for is yes. So your VPN, when you connect to a VPN, it's going to have a log of the IP address that you use, your actual IP address that you use to connect to that VPN server, right? Now, to combat this, to combat being in possession of this particular data, most VPN services will say, as part of their business model, that they don't keep any logs. So if anybody asked them for the information, it wouldn't be there. But technically, they would be recording it, and you'd be surprised how many VPN services actually do keep logs.
But do you think that's...
The VPN
What Rebel is asking is, do you think that's a way for companies in Louisiana to be forced, or companies using having customers in Louisiana, to be forced to turn over information if they use a VPN?
Oh, I mean, maybe. I mean, if they're constantly connected to VPNs, seen as some kind of way around the system, then yeah, maybe. I mean, it's possible.
Go ahead, Rob.
I wonder if that defense would work for the site itself. Like, if I wanted to put up a porn site and say, well, sorry, Louisiana, but I don't keep logs of IP addresses or locations of where my visitors are coming from. I just don't log that. And so I have no way of knowing if my patrons are from Louisiana or from, you know, the planet Zog. So good luck enforcing your thing on my site.
But then some state representative is going to go to your site from Louisiana and say, look at all the porn I just accessed for 8 hours, and you didn't do anything to stop me, and therefore we're going to charge you with a crime. That's how they work.
So a VPN, when you log on to a VPN, they know where you're coming from, but the site that you're going to is going to have to ask the VPN who accessed our site from your VPN.
Yes, but I wanted to mention you're not necessarily required. Like, VPN is a concept. It's not necessarily just service providers. So if you were really, you know, into building it, you could have a virtual server or pay for IP in another state and implement VPN service there and basically get out of state by connecting to your own machine and just make sure when you implement that you don't have any logs there. There's a lot of different ways to do it. You're not necessarily tied into trusting that a service is going to protect you. You can set up all kinds of crazy community networks and, you know, trade access with people in other parts of the country. It depends on, you know, how seriously you need to connect. Obviously, this is a little bit more for leisure, I'd say. But, you know, there are other reasons to be able to get information in a place that's not allowing you to.
Yeah, I feel compelled to bring as much porn as possible to Louisiana now. I don't know. It feels like a mission.
So if I go to 2600.com on a VPN, can you guys go to the VPN and say, who logged on through your VPN on this time and this date?
Wow.
No, because we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't keep it necessarily, and we wouldn't inspect it in the way that you're thinking, and we wouldn't know which IPs necessarily unless we went through all of them, analyzed them, and figured out which ones were actually a part of a VPN service, and then independently figured out which VPN service to contact once we eliminated all the private IPs that aren't using that. But it's beyond the scope of the way we would manage our website. But that's not necessarily we except that that's not necessarily how every website is run. So it's potentially, but not in the case of our website. It's not something that we want to keep for any period of time.
And we don't keep logs at all, just for the record.
Now, also, so we're at this casino, and, you know, I went to the restaurant, and I, you know, had some dinner, and, you know, there are old people at this casino, I noticed that, you know, they take the credit card, when they pay the bill, and when I pay with my credit card, they ask for ID. I mean, I don't think they asked anybody else. They asked for ID and from me. I mean, well, I was happy to give it to them, but...
You're saying they didn't ask anybody else or that you've never seen this before?
I don't think so. I think so. I mean, maybe because I'm, you know, wearing a black Raiders jersey and blue jeans and my hat backwards. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, nobody in California does that. I don't. That's. I'm not sure what the state rules are. I know in New York, it's not legal to ask for ID with a credit card. I'm pretty sure that's. Alex, do you know more about this?
Yeah, I just thought that, you know, one reasonable explanation for them asking you and nobody else for identification when using a credit card, Rebel, was possibly that the woman was a very good judge of character.
Well, you could say that, but also another possibility: what is your credit card signed?
If it's fine, no, I don't think they...
Okay, sometimes, if you don't sign your credit card, they will ask for ID so they can compare your signature. Sometimes they do that.
Maybe that's
or
maybe
or so they can prove it's
you know,
the same
look,
name.
That, maybe that? It's because I'm you know maybe it's because I look like I'm 25 when I'm really like 40. So.
You just had to get that in. Okay, yeah. Rebel looks incredibly young, I guess.
Well,
I guess
you
can say that. You
know, I'm, you know, there's, like, old people there, and then I'm the only one that's, like I said, you know, in a black Raiders jersey and with a hat backwards, and, you know. So.
Yeah, and no one's dressed like that in decades, I know. Maybe you're stuck in some kind of time capsule that...
No, I'm just curious. I mean, I'm happy to provide my ID. I just you know, an observation.
Gila, go ahead.
Rebel, can I ask what kind of credit card you were using?
It's a debit card. It's a, you know, a Chase debit card.
And can we get the last four digits of that, please?
No, it's
why?
Well, no, it's...
I'm being polite.
Don't listen to him, Rebel.
Well, because I think there may be different requirements for a credit card versus a debit card, and if they didn't have, you know, the thingy bobber that you could put your PIN number... I'm sorry, I just said PIN number twice.
No, you know what? I did use my debit card, but I did not have to enter any PIN. So she took it somewhere and processed it and brought it back to me. So
like ran it as a credit card.
Right.
She cloned it. All right. So she's going to be getting Chick-fil-A all over the country now. That's what happened.
Yeah. I guess I won't have enough money to come back to New York.
Well, it was nice seeing you when we did. And we'll remember that forever. Anything else, Rebel? Because theoretically, we have other calls out there.
I was going to go to the Phoenix 2600 meeting, but my battery on my phone went out.
Number one excuse for not going to the Phoenix 2600 meeting is that people's batteries have run out. So you're not alone there. All right, Rebel. Well, it's good hearing from you. We have to take some more calls now. Be safe out there in California, and let us know next week where you are.
Misbehave.
Yes.
All right.
Take care.
I'll be in Florida next week.
All right. Spoiler alert. Fine. Now we know where he's going to be.
Okay.
The Rebel tour continues. All right. So 802-321-4225 is our phone number.
No doubt wearing a Dolphins jersey.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And a hat upside down on his head. Yes, Arsenio, we still get calls from Rebel every damn week.
He's active. He's out there. Mixing it up.
Dedicated.
Doesn't even let us give out the phone number.
No, which we've done now, and we'll give it a few minutes. Basically, what we do is we wait around to give people a chance to say what's on their minds, and if they have nothing to say, then we move on. Yes, Rob, you have something to say.
Yeah, just to give that phone number out again, it's 802-321-4225, or if you'd like to call us toll-free, you can get us that way at 833-755-2600.
And that's what it sounds like when the phone rings.
Absolutely.
No, I'm lying. That's the doorbell. We don't have a call, Kyle? Okay, you know what, folks? We're going to just leave in a few minutes because we've said everything we have to say. So now's the time where you can say what you want to say. And it doesn't matter, new callers, old callers, just give us a call. But next couple of minutes, we won't have anything more to say.
Yeah. Anything that you've hacked that you noticed that was unusual, technology, telephones, news stories that you thought would interest us and that we missed somehow, anything. You know, we love to revisit stories. If you have updates for things, it's all welcome. That's what this hour or so is for.
Yes, Rob.
And just to give out information on something that will be happening 4 weeks from now, actually, the next 2600 meeting, the one in February on the 3rd, Friday the 3rd, after that, there's going to be a little memorial get-together in honor of our friend Jim, who we recently lost. Pam, Jim's widow, has arranged a gathering that's going to take place at a nearby diner. And so if you're local and you come to the 2600 meeting, you want to come along to that, the information is on nyc2600.net.
Yeah, can I say, I had an opportunity to visit the Citigroup building in recent weeks. And I'm amazed by what they have done to that space. It is such an incredible hangout. There's all these little places that you can go to have, like, a conversation with somebody, like just counter space with it's kind of like being in Tokyo. You know, all these little tiny places where they serve all kinds of different things.
All types of food.
Yeah, all types.
There's multiple places to get a drink, and it's just really fresh and expansive. Lots of places to sit.
Yeah, you don't have to go to an establishment. You can sit out in the open area. And I imagine, Rob, I haven't been to a meeting in a while, but you don't have to go anywhere afterwards, do you? You can simply stay there.
No, you really don't, because there's a lot of stuff to eat. There's a lot of options, stuff that fits all sorts of dietary requirements. Mm-hmm. There's a halal place. There's a kosher place. And there's a pizza place. So, you know, that's all three of the food groups right there.
I didn't see a single big chain. They all seem to be fairly independent.
Yeah, and everything I've tried there so far has been pretty good. It's a decent food court, and it's really pleasant what they've done with the place. It's almost worth those like 13 years of remodeling they were doing.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. Took a lot. 13 years.
I don't think it was 13 years.
Felt like 13.
Yeah, it did. Do we have a call?
We do.
Oh, okay. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Johnny Fusion.
Hey, Johnny, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, feeling better.
Yeah, you called us a couple of weeks ago about articles you had written, and you were getting over some health challenges.
Yes, indeed. Got some good news from my doctors.
Okay, that's great.
At my clinic this week, so that was good.
Good to hear.
Fantastic.
And hopefully
working on a new article.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully you're writing another article for us. That'd be great.
Yeah, I put down about 1,100 words on it this morning.
Nice.
To go on with the 1,500 words I wrote earlier.
That's 2,600 words. If you add them up, 2,600, that's what you get.
Yeah, 2,600 words right now, and it's almost done.
Cool.
Just working on the conclusion.
Okay, all right.
Well, we encourage anybody out there, and just like you're doing, write freely as just an exercise. Get ideas out there. Come back to them. Revisit it when you can. But we are always interested in what people have to say. And it allows you to take your time to articulate the thoughts, and you don't have the pressure of, like, giving a talk at an event or calling and being on the radio necessarily. You get to spend the time forming your idea, and we just really, we love to see people that enjoy and feel empowered by that, because that's the whole point of publishing and then sharing about it, and especially in the technical realm. So please keep it up, and I encourage everybody out there listening, just write. Please write and share with us, you know, your ideas for the future, maybe stuff that you've, you know, nostalgia, stuff from the past, or what's going on now in your world. It all applies, and we'd love to hear more about it. So that's just fantastic, and keep it up.
Yeah, I've been a professional writer for, 30 years now.
Wow.
I was first published as a teenager, but I was first paid in my 20s.
Cool.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Aaron Swartz.
Yes,
you know, and
this anniversary.
The anniversary of his unfortunate death.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
You know, it was. You know, it was 10 years ago. I was 40, and I remember just being shook because I followed his career, you know, him starting Reddit, and I think he just embodied the hacker ethic, you know, especially with this thing that the federal government both prosecuted and persecuted him over. And that's the sharing of information. Like, he was trying to make information more freely available. And we had this really bad law, and they just said, oh, you know, we have this bad law. Here's someone doing something that's costing these journals potential money. Because, like I said last time I called, capitalism ruins everything it touches, and it touches everything. Because, I mean, that's really what the crime was. They were making less money from these academic journals.
Mm-hmm.
But information should be free. I mean, that's the cornerstone of the hacker ethic. And I really don't consider it a suicide. I think the government killed him, honestly. Just because it was such an over-the-top prosecution and what he was facing sentence-wise, and how he, and the way the law was written, he couldn't mount a good defense. And it was a real miscarriage of justice.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, we've seen the effects it's had on people in the past. We've seen the overreach. We've seen the overzealous prosecutions of individuals in the past. And, yeah, Alex, you know this quite well. The success rate, if you call it success, of the federal government when prosecuting cases is close to 100% because they have unlimited resources, and the people that are trying to protect themselves or defend themselves don't, and they either have to plead to something as part of a plea agreement, or they simply lose and lose a good part of their lives, and in some cases they lose their lives entirely. And I agree with the caller that we can put the responsibility for his death on those people that did not see this as a human being. You know, they saw this as something, a threat that needed to be stopped by any means necessary, and it's just, it's unforgivable. Alex, go ahead. Alex, you're muted again.
I don't know. It takes seconds to unmute, even these days. You know, one thing I feel compelled to mention about Aaron Swartz and sort of remembering him and just kind of putting things in context, too, but, you know, our very own... you know, Virgil Griffith actually worked with Aaron Swartz. You know, they were buddies. They worked together on the Tor2 web proxy. And, you know, it's something I think about a lot. There's a lot of parallels between those two cases. And, you know, I don't want to reveal, but, you know, Virgil and I have even, you know, talked about that. And it's just such a tragedy in both instances. It really, really is. It's, mm-hmm. Horrendous.
Yeah. 10 years. Unbelievable. The things that he could have contributed, accomplished, shared in those 10 years and beyond, you know, it's just, it makes me really angry that we've all lost so much. You know, Kyle mentioned SecureDrop before. He was fundamental in the development of that invaluable app, and so much more.
Yeah, I think about that every time I'm interacting and working with the freedom of the press and just thinking about it. It's in the back of my mind, like, this would not be without his efforts and vision. And like you said, what would he be guiding now?
Mm-hmm.
What in Freedom of the Press Foundation, what would he be guiding there? What other things would he have taken on and be leading and guiding people with his vision throughout this technical landscape, you know, that we're living in now?
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to think about, but I'm glad we are now.
Yeah. Rob, did you have something?
Yeah. Today, just thinking about how it's been 10 years, and it seems crazy that it's been 10 years. I went back. I was listening to – he was a guest on our show on August 15th, 2012, talking about SOPA. He – very strictly was not allowed to talk about his case. We arranged all that beforehand when I invited him on. But he talked about the SOPA fiasco, which was another thing that he was trying to correct and fix and educate people about. And he was in town doing a talk about that. And it was great getting to know him a little bit. He came out to dinner with us after the show afterward, and just having the chance to chat with him. You knew you were with somebody who was a brilliant mind,
mm-hmm.
and so young and so much potential, and it's mind-boggling to think of all the things he could have accomplished. I also went back and listened to our episode from January 16th, 2013, which was our first edition after Aaron's death, and Virgil was actually, he called in for a bit to talk about him. Yeah, that's it was a somber show, to be sure, but it was also just all the notes that we were getting and that we were seeing, and the swell of support out there for the life he lived and what could have been and what an injustice had been done to him. The best any of us can do with any of that is learn from it and do what we can to improve things so that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate those people that are around, that are unique. And I remember that day, too, you know, when he came to the show and we hung out afterwards. And, you know, sadly, it was the only time I got to hang out with him. But I was just so impressed with what a positive force he was. And, you know, you mentioned brilliant minds. There are many brilliant minds out there, but a brilliant mind that can actually be open and inviting to those people that don't have his level of knowledge. You know, that's a rare thing. Few people have both, and he had that. And it was just such a joy to be around him and to talk to him, even in that brief period. I just, you know, it was so soon after that we lost him, and I just, you know, it would be a different place now had he stuck around. Gila, go ahead.
So I didn't know Aaron. I didn't know any of you people until a few years after he passed away. But I'm going to turn to the tradition of my faith tradition and the faith tradition that Aaron was raised in and say that there are a couple things that are said. And we say that somebody's memory should be a blessing. And more recently, the term has come up that somebody's memory should be a revolution. And I think that is probably the best way that we can perpetuate his memory, is that his memory should be a blessing and a revolution and a way that will keep us motivated in something that, you know, be the change he wanted to see in the world. And that's how we keep his memory alive, I think.
I think that's something that he would be honored by, and he certainly appreciates that. And the show that Rob mentioned, of course, is in our archives, as are all of our shows at 2600.com/off the hook. Johnny, I got to thank you for bringing that up, getting us all to reminisce and pontificate a little bit about this.
Yeah, I listened to his SOPA show this afternoon before the live show today. Actually, that's how I spent my afternoon. And actually I did something a little bit to honor him, you know, because I set up a new Mastodon account, the Dallas-Fort Worth 2600 group set up a new Mastodon instance. I'm the third user on it.
Cool.
And one of the things you can do is you can set up for your Mastodon feed to be converted to RSS, which he invented, if I'm not mistaken.
Did he?
Is that true? He was 14.
Wait. Aaron Schwartz invented RSS at 14?
He did.
Wow. It's just amazing that I'm still learning these things. That is incredible.
You know, it's like he has such a legacy. You know, he contributed so much to the internet that we know today. And he was robbed from us by the federal government.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not just the federal government. It's the attitude. You know, the attitude of punishment for stepping outside the norms or challenging the system. You see that everywhere. You know, you see that in schools. You see that, you know, in local governments and state governments and, you know, in people. And it's something we have to get away from. We have to embrace the differences. We have to embrace those people who are making new boundaries and challenging the old ones, you know, and not think of them as enemies, not think of them as threats. Because oftentimes they're the hope, they're a salvation of sorts.
Yeah, that's one thing I like about living in California is we tend to embrace our eccentrics.
Uh-huh.
of which I'm definitely one.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And embrace that, please. You know, and please continue being that way.
I would just like to say, coincidentally, it's also where Rebel is.
All right. You know what? It just kind of blew the whole mood there, Alex. Thank you. But no, Rebel is definitely one that qualifies, absolutely. And
yeah,
wouldn't have it any other way.
The more the merrier, in my view.
Yeah.
I agree with that entirely.
Arsene, was there anything you wanted to add to any of this? I just didn't want to leave you out.
No, just happy to see you guys again, and definitely keep being weird, everyone out there.
Well, you too, obviously. Johnny, again, thanks for calling us, and please keep writing that article and many more, hopefully.
Yeah, I should be done in a day or two.
Okay.
Maybe tonight.
Awesome. Well, we're waiting by the electronic mailbox.
I'll be submitting it soon. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Be well.
Bye.
And I guess we can open up just for one more phone call because it's getting a little bit late here, and, you know, we have to put the cows to bed and all that kind of thing. Yes, Rob, you have your hand raised.
Just to be perfectly clear, Aaron Swartz didn't invent RSS single-handedly. There was an RSS dev working group that consisted of a handful of people from all over the world, but Aaron was one of them, and he was instrumental in it. Wow. And he was 14.
Unbelievable. So unbelievable. You know, those of you listening, or, you know, whether it's now or in the future, there's somebody like Aaron that you know or know of. And you have to encourage that person and support that person and defend that person. They need us, you know, and we can't allow things like this to happen again.
And help guide them into projects like that, because that's a perfect example of whenever we talk about silliness and kind of young people doing just kind of seemingly just mindless stuff on social media. But, you know, that doesn't mean, and then thinking that that's the internet, like that's being online. And I think, you know, reminding people and steering people that are interested towards projects that are technical or that, you know, might be a challenge for them. It's a puzzle, you know, that kind of stuff. I think it's just so crucial to remind people that are just getting familiar with the internet that, you know, it's not just one app, it's not just one website or one TV program you stream. There is so much to it. It is a lifetime of knowledge to try to learn about computers. You can't learn everything. Like any one part, you could spend a lifetime just trying to perfect your understanding of it. And it is a constantly evolving field. It's changing. There's many people collaborating and working on projects like RSS that will be the infrastructure, and they'll be the protocols for the next silly form of entertainment that mindless youths are using. But be that as it may, it'll be still amazing and important, and more for it for having new people with new perspectives jump in and get to work on it.
Absolutely. All right. I guess that's it. No phone call, right?
No, we're clear. There are no more calls.
I'm calling it then. That's it for the show tonight. Arsene, it was so great seeing you again. After 14 years, coming back into Off the Hook. Different because we're not all in the same room as we used to be. I hope that day comes again soon. Any thoughts, observations? I realize we can do this any time. You don't have to be in New Jersey for us to connect to you. You could be in St. Petersburg or wherever it is you happen to be these days. And it's that's the magic of how we're doing things now. But I was wondering if you had any perspectives or thoughts or observations.
I don't know. I think I'd love to join you guys again at some time. Very good to see you guys, and I really like the warm messages that you're sending to people. I do occasionally listen, but I think for me, usually this is too late to listen to the show live.
How did you get involved both in the show and in the hacker community? Do you remember?
I mean, I was always a hacker, but hacker at heart. I don't remember. Too many things have happened. I'm getting too old. We're all getting old.
You look like you haven't aged a day, though. I mean, it's incredible.
That's nice to hear. I'm also a 15-year-old looking boy that's 40.
Wow. Is that how old you were when you were doing the show? 15?
No.
I don't know. No. We don't take ID.
Yeah. Not like Louisiana.
No. No. Although if we get broadcast into Louisiana, we might have to. I don't know. All right. Well, great seeing you all. And again, write to us, oth@2600.com. And we will be back with Overtime next week at 8 o'clock and, of course, Off the Hook next week at 7 o'clock on WBAI.
Please write to us, oth@2600.com, and you can find us all over Channel 2600 on YouTube. I think we're still Hacker Radio Show on Twitter, but more importantly, I think there's a Mastodon for yeah. this program. Maybe, Rob, you can give that out as well.
Is that still suspended? Did we get it back?
Yeah, did we ever get that back?
Yes, we have it. It's hackerradioshow@mastodon.social. Our profile is still hidden by the moderators of that instance for some reason, so we're looking into that and trying to get in touch with them and figure out what's going on. But you can still bring it up. You just have to click through an extra thing.
Maybe we should just move to a different...
hackerradioshow@mastodon.social.
The thing is, with Mastodon, if you don't like how you're being treated, you can go somewhere else. And,
yeah,
that is true.
Yeah. Is there a dot antisocial?
I'm sure there is.
Well,
we could start it if we want
to. We'll have to look into it.
We can apply for dot antisocial during the next... round of GTLD applications.
There we go. That's
I would support it.
Wow. Yep. All right, folks. See you later. Good night.